What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero, because World War III is a really bad idea. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It is Friday, the 18th of October. Thank goodness it's Friday. Thank goodness it's Friday. Thank goodness it's Friday. We have a lot to talk about today here. The phone lines are open, 800-313-9443. And if all goes as planned this weekend, which is when I'm putting my office and studio back together, this will be the last time you see this particular view behind me, because on Monday, we should be back to our normal broadcasting system. Before we get into the news, though, we have a special guest online right now, and that's Jim Fetzer, and I'm sure you're all familiar with the name. So, Jim, are you there?
Yes, I am, Michael. Very pleased to be with you.
Well, welcome back to the show here, and, you know, obviously a lot of people are talking about this ridiculous trial you've been put through, and how, To give an overview, I can't imagine there's anybody listening to this show who doesn't know the story, but this goes back to the Sandy Hook shooting, which appears to have been a staged false flag. It's been confirmed that the school was not even active at the time. There was no computer traffic going in or out, no phone traffic going in or out. The place was full of mold and safety violations. And so the whole thing appears to have been another one of the hoaxes by the gun grabbers. And I remember seeing this video of this sheriff coming on out and literally threatening anybody with arrest if they dared air any conspiracy theories about what had happened. So I guess they knew that they'd kind of blown their own credibility. So you've written a lot of articles about what happened at Sandy Hook, including a book called Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, for which you were sued by Mr. Posner. And the judge found four statements in the book that he considered defamatory and basically declared you guilty by imperial edict. You didn't even get a jury trial on this one. The only time they called in a jury was to determine the amount of damages, which came out to $450,000. So why don't you give us your version of events, exactly what happened about, you know, the examination of the documents in question and so forth.
Well, you sure got the right idea there, Michael. Very nicely done. It was actually not a sheriff, but a lieutenant, Paul Vance of the Connecticut State Police, who we have discovered were actually running the op behind the scenes. We have in the book, by the way, which was published on 22 October 2015, I brought together 13 experts, including six current or retired PhD professors, to sort out what had actually happened. And we discovered that the school had been closed by 2008. You've cited some of the evidence, therefore it was in deplorable condition, loaded with asbestos and other biohazards, damaged by a hurricane. There were no students there, as you observe. In fact, initially, there were some residents in the area who were willing to speak out. But after the threat was made, which you've correctly identified, they tended to clam up. They were saying they were surprised any students were there because the school had been abandoned. It was actually a two-day FEMA exercise. It was a mass casualty drill involving children. On the 13th, the day before the official shooting on the 14th, we have not only all the evidence from the scene that was a drill, including a portable sign that said everyone must check in, porta potties already in place, pizza, bottled water available at the firehouse, many coming to the scene wearing name tags on lanyards. All of those are very consistent with a FEMA exercise. It states right in the manual, which we discovered and published as Appendix A to the book, that everyone must check in with a controller upon arrival. Refreshments and restrooms, of course, are standard parts of FEMA exercises, and they identify the players by color-coded name tags on lanyards. Michael, even parents were bringing children to the scene, which, of course, would be absurd. No parent's going to bring a child to the scene of a child shooting massacre. Events the following day were even more striking. There was no surge of EMTs into the building. no string of ambulances to rush their little bodies off to hospitals where they could be declared dead or alive. No medevac helicopter was called. Triage tarps were laid out, but no bodies of dead or wounded were ever placed on them. I have frequently pointed out you can prove that this was a hoax just on the basis of a photograph of the parking lot, because you'll notice there's none of the blue and white signage for handicapped parking. I checked the laws in Connecticut, the federal and state laws. This school was out of compliance with federal and state laws because it didn't have wheelchair accessibility. We have a wooden stairway. No wheelchair could have navigated. There's a steel pipe sticking out that could have popped the eye out of a little kid. No, this is a very well-to-do community. It's been compared as Beverly Hills is one of the two richest communities in the whole country, Michael. And another sign from the parking lot, and there are two. Well, one is that it was only a 38-degree ground temperature day, Fahrenheit, meaning you'd obviously have to heat up the school if you were going to conduct classes. But there's no steam or heat rising from the building, no doubt because the boilers were decrepit from non-use and couldn't be fired up. And what many find even more striking is that the vehicles parked in the center rows all parked facing the building. The driving instructions would have you come in off of Dickinson Drive, the only access route, turn right, curl around, then park facing away. But it appears it was just a whole lot simpler to bring the vehicles in a single line and put them in two by two by two. After all, they were only props. Who was even going to notice?
Well, we all did. We all noticed.
I know. Isn't it amazing? That's what they thought. In the book, Michael, we have a chapter 7 of 50 photographs of them furnishing an empty house to serve as the Adam Lanza residence, the most striking of which is a photograph of the Nancy Lanza bedroom where her son Adam is alleged to have shot her with a .22 caliber rifle. There's a little red stuff on the bed, but it doesn't look like blood. I think it might be raspberry jam. There's a cedar chest at the foot of the bed that has forms on it. They were keeping records of how they arranged the rooms on forms you find in various photographs. And with her keen eye, Kelly Watt, who has her own home and commercial cleaning service, spotted a blue moving pad that in their haste they had forgotten to remove. In Chapter 8, we have another 50 photographs of how they refurbished the school to serve as the stage, including one quite big. What I initially thought was a crime investigating vehicle, very large, in the parking lot. And just above the roof, you can see a string of four windows in classroom 10 that are undamaged. That's significant because after the event, they'd be shot out. So you know for a certainty this is before the shooting. You've got a flagpole at full mast come down. There's a familiar face leaning against a wall with his arms folded. The medical examiner Wayne Carver, and there's crime scene tape up for a crime that is yet to be committed. We discovered between the first and second edition that although we'd originally thought it was taken the morning of the 14th, it actually was taken the evening of the 13th based on shadow analysis. The whole case revolved around a couple of statements made in the book. I can read them for you so you see what we're talking about. Go ahead, Michael.
I said, please do. Please read the
statement. Oh, yes. Okay. The second edition of this is actually paragraph 17 and 18 of the complaint. The second edition of Nobody Died at Sandy Hook accuses plaintiff of issuing and or possessing a forged copy of, and it's very odd, they just referred to the alleged decedent as N.P., NP's death certificate, in particular, page 183, it's actually 181, of Nobody Died at Sandy Hook states, Noah Posner's death certificate is a fake, which we have proven on a dozen or more grounds. At page 232, the book states, Mr. Posner sent her a death certificate, which turned out to be a fabrication. At page 242, the book states, as many Sandy Hook researchers are aware, the very document Posner circulated in 2014 with its inconsistent tones, fonts, and clear digital manipulation was clearly a forgery. It continues in paragraph 18. Mr. Fetzer's publication of this false accusation against the plaintiff was not limited to the book. He repeated that false statement on one or more blogs, including, and then he cites Robert David Steele's blog, where he and I had collaborated with him in editing a memoranda series, short pieces for the President of the United States, which anyone can download for free, about how we know Sandy Hook was a FEMA drill where nobody died. The post, a particular contribution of mine, where I had several, was dated August 5th, 2018. Their defendant, Fetzer, made the following false statement. NP's death certificate turned out to be a fabrication with the bottom half of a real death certificate and the top half of a fake, with no file number and the wrong estimated time of death at 11 a.m. when officially the shooting took place between 9:35 and 9:40 that morning. So that was the whole basis for the complaint, Michael. The book is 446 pages long. Noah Posner or Leonard Posner, who calls himself Lenny, are mentioned on only 17 pages. And these were the few sentences they cited. What's rather fascinating about this is the claim was made, and they had a psychiatrist as their primary witness, actually virtually their whole case, who testified that Mr. Posner was recovering from the death of his son and would by 2014 and would have led a relatively normal life, but for these sentences in this book, which caused him to have a relapse of PTSD, from which, according to the psychiatrist, he will never recover. So look at the absurdity on its face. He can lose his son in a mass shooting, but he's going to get over that, but for a few sentences suggesting the death certificate is a fabrication, when, after all, Michael, everyone who studied Sandy Hook and knows that it was a FEMA exercise recognized that any death certificate for purported victims is going to be a fake. I mean, it's unbelievable. And Posner, by the way, has been extremely aggressive in going after those who provide evidence that Sandy Hook was itself a staged event, including having taken down 1,555 videos from YouTube, which you know well. Yes. Had to include a great many making assertions that are far stronger than these observations of mine. And he's boasted of being responsible for taking down tens of thousands of content items from the internet. Well, one of the very interesting aspects, by the way, of PTSD is that those who have PTSD display avoidance behavior. They don't want to take actions that remind them of the traumatic event. But mm-hmm. In this case, his behavior was completely the opposite. It's also extremely interesting, Michael, that the case was actually my liability, to wit, the decision that these statements were in fact false and thereby had defamed Mr. Posner, was made by the court during a summary judgment, which cannot be properly decided unless there are no disputed facts. Well, the authenticity of the death certificate was a disputed fact. It turns out it was an uncertified death certificate, and it's a violation of Connecticut law. Not even parents are allowed to have uncertified death certificates. But also that I had two forensic document examiners attest, and we had their formal reports, their affidavits, their examiner reports, their credentials, which are very imposing, that not only was that death certificate a fabrication, but three others that had surfaced during the course of the case were as well. Let me just read you from the first of the two, his a bit from the first paragraph. His name is Larry Wickstrom. My name is Larry Wickstrom. I'm a computer, printer, scanner, network communication forensic expert, curriculum vitae attached. The documents that I usually evaluate for fabrication, alteration of misrepresentation, or financial contracts, affidavits, and exhibits entered with pleadings. As the client, Moonrock Books, was referred to me by an attorney that I'd worked with on foreclosure cases, I did not expect to find multiple obviously altered versions of a child's death certificate when I opened the email attachments provided for my initial examination. In his final determinations, he includes From my examination of the documents which were presented to me electronically and by U.S. mail, I make these determinations. One, that the 132 kilobyte JPEG image certificate of death for Noah Samuel Posner, age 6, certificate of death 1, as examined, is an alteration and unreliable document image. No determination of originality or intentional acts of forgery can be supported due to the multi-generational copy degradation of printed image and low resolution of the captured image. Two, that the obviously altered in shape and content 1.7 megabyte JPEG image certificate of death for Noah Samuel Posner, age 6, certificate of death 2, is a forgery. Three, that the State of Connecticut Registrar of Vital Statistics has issued two different and certified as true versions of the state file number 2012-07-078-0033, a certificate of death for Noah Samuel Posner, age 6, that, for reasons disclosed and undisclosed, the content of state file number 2012-07-078-03 has been digitally and physically altered. Fifth, that until such time as the state of Connecticut addresses and rectifies the conditions that allow this kind of record manipulation, any true copy of a record file certified by the seal of State of Connecticut Department of Public Health should be considered suspect and treated as unreliable. End of report. The judge just set those aside as mere opinions and went ahead and issued his decision in spite of the disputed status of the death certificate, which means, of course, I'm appealing, and that is an extraordinarily stunning aspect of very central to the appeal.
Well, as I recall, the FBI's crime statistics for that year show no deaths in Connecticut. That's another oddity in this entire case. And the victim of a kangaroo court. The judge just said, we're not going to pay attention to these document experts. It's just an opinion. And I, the judge, hereby have declared that all of this is defamatory and we're going to proceed to damages. So you got railroaded, no question about it. And I'm glad you're appealing, and I wish you luck on that. But I think the reason that this case has attracted so much attention is not because of Sandy Hook itself, but because I think they're trying to send a warning. Because the U.S. government, the corporate media, are finally coming to grips with the fact they've lost control of the narrative to the American people. We don't trust them anymore because we've been lied to so much. And so they're trying to basically silence all questioning and dissent. YouTube is doing it. Facebook's doing it. Google's doing it. Twitter's doing it. And not just with regard to Sandy Hook. As you're probably aware, Project Veritas just put out a three-part video exposing CNN's bias against the White House, and all of the corporate social media, they're taking those videos and articles down. It's now a banned subject.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning, Michael, and you're 100% correct. This was actually a classic slap suit, meaning a strategic lawsuit against public participation that was intended to punish citizen journalists, and I've been the a columnist and a writer, a reporter for multiple venues, including Veterans Today for a couple of years and on my blog and elsewhere. They're trying to silence anyone who speaks out and exposes corruption by the deep state so that it was, camouflaged precisely as you are implying as a defamation suit when indeed, our findings are correct, no defamation took place. Of course, respect that the court made the finding, but the very fact that I'm appealing obviously reflects my disagreement with the court's finding, as I've explained here and now.
Well, I think the fact that you were not even allowed to have a jury to present the evidence to tells you right there that this was a study in foregone conclusions. They were going to nail you. They were going to try and nail Alex Jones and Wolfgang Halbig as a warning to stay silent. Okay, we've got to take a break for commercials. We're going to be back here with Jim Fetzer after these few words.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on. Can't get no work, can't draw no pay.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're talking with Jim Fetzer, author of the books Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, who was sued for defamation on the basis of a claim that the death certificates for this 6-year-old boy had been altered digitally, and he had document examiners who came on in and said, you know, we're experts in this. And these have been faked, and the judge just said, eh, that's just your opinion, and threw it out, and railroaded Fetzer into this case. And the only time they called a jury was to determine the award, which has been set at $450,000. And this is being done as part of a campaign to get the independent media, to get independent researchers to self-censor, to say, you know, I know something bad has happened, but I don't want to say anything because something bad may happen to me. And you're right, a lot of the people who lived around the school who wanted to speak out about the fact that the school was already closed went silent. There was that very strange situation where a whole bunch of people in that neighborhood all of a sudden had their mortgages paid off completely. So, I mean, it's just a bizarre story. So where do you go from here now?
Well, Michael, the case, the complaint was very narrowly drawn, as you have heard, just to focus on those four sentences. When I responded in court, and when you're sued, you have the opportunity to move to dismiss the suit or to submit an answer. And because I thought this was an opportunity to present all the evidence we'd accumulated and published in the book, that I ought to respond and have it certified in a formal fashion in a court of law. So that I explained I would have two lines of defense. First, all the proof, abundant and compelling, that it was a FEMA drill and that no one had died. Indeed, one of the other contributors to the book, Paul Preston, who is himself a radio host for his Agenda 21, who's been a principal, he supervised active shooter drills, was so troubled by what he saw being broadcast from Newtown that day that he reached out to his contacts in the Obama Department of Education, all of whom confirmed that it had been a drill, that no one had died, that it was done to promote gun control. And then my second line of defense would be specific properties of the death certificate, about the shaded background, about different typefaces and the like. Now, the judge actually narrowed my ability to present evidence to only evidence related directly to the death certificate per se. So all that vast and compelling evidence I've been describing was not allowed to be introduced into the case. I also discovered in the process that some of the reasons I had for concluding the death certificate was fake were mistaken, because it turns out there are three different parties that make out the death certificate. There's a center part made out by the medical examiner about the cause of death. There's a top part made out by the funeral parlor about the funeral. And then the bottom is made out by the town registrar of vital statistics, in this case for Newtown, Debbie Aurelia. Now, what that meant were a couple of my arguments about it were mistaken, which I would gladly have corrected were there to have been a third edition of the book, but that I was correct that it was a fabrication because it had neither a file number nor a town nor a state registration, the town registration being the crucial one, and in Connecticut, not even a parent is allowed to have an uncertified death certificate. So it was, in fact, not a proper document on its face. Now, this led me to be very much constrained in the amount of evidence I could produce into the context of the case. And in fact, the whole first part of the case, through the summary judgment hearing, I was unrepresented by an attorney. I do believe it would have made a major difference, because the attorney would have opposed rendering a ruling when there was an issue, a major issue in dispute, namely the authenticity of the death certificate. But where, you know, by virtue of not having an attorney, I mean, the judge just moved forward and proceeded precisely as you have described.
Well, yeah, it would have been better if you'd had an attorney. It would have been better if you'd had a jury. But very obviously, the judge was compromised. Probably has political ambition. But there's absolutely no question that he was not operating in an objective, unbiased way. And his job there was to basically make sure that you got convicted so that they could hit you with this heavy fine and basically drive you out of business. And again, I don't think it's personally directed at you, but as a warning. And yes, you got a very brief case, but I keep thinking back to the Boston Marathon bombing, when Zokhar Tsarnaev was given a court-appointed attorney, and she walked right in and said to the jury, "Yeah, he did it." talk about rush to judgment. Anyway, Jim, we got to do another commercial break. Stay on the line. I'm going to come back to you.
Thanks, Michael.
Oh, yeah. You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, just try it yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're talking with Jim Fetzer, the author of the books Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, who basically is the victim of a gross miscarriage of justice in that he was denied a jury trial. He was denied the opportunity to present exculpatory evidence that he was not, in fact, guilty of defamation. He got railroaded by the judge, period, end of discussion. And I'm glad he's appealing, and I wish you a lot of luck. But there was something else that you started to say when we went to commercial break.
Well, it was very interesting how their whole case relied upon one expert who is supposed to be knowledgeable about PTSD, but who was basing his diagnosis not on any verified statements about the case or about me or my relationship with Leonard Posner, but on what he had been told by Leonard Posner and his attorneys, which included the claim that I had claimed that Leonard Posner had fabricated the death certificate for his son, which I had not. I had declared that the death certificate itself was not authentic, but not that he had done it. that I had harassed Leonard Posner. I had never harassed Leonard Posner. They claimed I had had phone calls with Leonard Posner. I had had no phone calls with Leonard Posner. Anyone who actually read the chapter, by the way, would have known those claims were false. Now, both Leonard Posner, as acknowledged during a video deposition he gave here in Madison earlier in the year, that he'd never read the book. The psychiatrist testified he'd never read the book. But it's even worse than that. He claimed to have read the chapter. But if he'd read the chapter, which is chapter 11, and it's the same in the first edition and the second, in fact, you know, 85, 90% of the book is the same in the second edition as in the first, where when the book was initially banned by Amazon.com on 19 November 2015, after I put it up for sale on 22 October and it had sold nearly 500 copies, I released it for free as a PDF. Now, anyone can still download it as a PDF, but I have no doubt one of the objectives of this lawsuit was to try to force the removal of the book after it had been banned and I'd released it from the internet altogether. So I want to say, anyone out there who has an interest in this case, you can now, right now, download for free the first edition of the book from the internet. There are several different places. And, you know,
can you share those with us? Can you share those with us? Where can people go to download the PDF of the first edition?
No, Michael, just put the title into your browser. Just put the title, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook PDF, and you'll have options. It's that simple. Now, interestingly, nothing ever emerged about why Leonard Posner might have a motive to have faked all of this. In fact, we know from our research on Sandy Hook generally that sympathetic but gullible Americans contributed between $27 and $130 million in donations, which, assuming that reporter calculation is accurate, divided between the 26 families that were supposed to be the survivors who lost children or relatives, that would work out to between $1 and $5 million apiece. Now, my opinion is that, and this was a part of my answer, I pressed this upon the court, but was never allowed to pursue it, that in fact there was a fraud being perpetrated on the court, because the person who was presenting himself as Leonard Posner wasn't the same person whose image had appeared worldwide thousands of times. And you have to ask yourself, Michael, why has this man gone to such extraordinary lengths to not allow his image from his video deposition or from the court to be broadcast when it's already appeared millions of times? I personally believe there's only one explanation, namely because it's not the same guy. In fact, at the time prior to this trial, but after the summary judgment, I believed I was entitled to elicit testimony from a witness for impeachment, so that I sent the video deposition to two parties, one a former attorney who'd been giving me legal advice and the other to Wolfgang Halbig. And Wolfgang just jumped on it and wrote to four different stations of the FBI. What are the consequences of an impersonator giving a video deposition as Leonard Posner? And he enumerated a half a dozen reasons why this was not Leonard Posner. Well, the image is also published on a blog because of my filing in this case, a public record where you can actually see the image. And other commentators on the blog have made even more devastating comments about the differences between the parties. But when, during the course of the discovery, I had sought to confirm that my suspicion that the photograph of Noah Posner was actually a fabrication by using the photographs of the person who's supposed to be his older stepbrother, Michael Vabner, as a child, where I'd done considerable research, we'd collectively, six of us, discovered they had the same eyes, they had the same eyebrows, they had the same nose, they had the same mouth, they had the same ears, they had the same shape of skull. And where I reached out to Larry Rivera, who has mastered the techniques of photogrammetry, which is the application of mathematics to the study of photographs, and had previously confirmed the identity of the man in the doorway at the book depository in Dallas as a Kennedy motorcade passed by to be Lee Oswald. So we knew what we'd already established on the basis of his height, his weight, his build, his shirt, and his T-shirt to be Lee Oswald and not Billy Lovelady, who himself described himself as 2 to 3 inches shorter, 15 to 20 pounds heavier, but also he was wearing a short-sleeve red and white vertically striped shirt. We knew it was Lee Oswald already, but Larry did the brilliant work of confirming that even the facial features are those of Lee Oswald. So I sent Larry two photographs, one of Michael Vabner, one of Noah Posner, and just asked, he didn't even know their names. I didn't tell him the names. I didn't give him the background. I didn't say this had anything to do with Sandy Hook. And I asked him if they were the same person, and he created a GIF where you can see Noah Posner turn into Michael Vabner. I mean, it's just stunning, Michael. It's probably the most significant telling development proof positive that this whole thing was an elaborate sham. In fact, Mona Alexis Presley has actually determined that some of the parents appear to use photographs of themselves when they were children to pull off this stunt. Now, Lenny, therefore, is highly motivated because in my counterclaims, not only for abuse of process, for using the legal process for improper purposes, which you've well described, but for fraud upon the court with his identity business, but also for having committed fraud and theft by deception because he got all this money from American citizens when they were in the false state of belief that he'd actually lost a child at Sandy Hook. So Leonard Posner has powerful motives to eliminate the evidence that would expose Sandy Hook as a hoax. He's worried he might have to give back the money. He might be prosecuted for fraud and theft by deception and go to jail. So, I mean, the guy's highly motivated, and this, I think, explains his behavior. But also, in a more general fashion, you're exactly right that they're attempting to use this case in order to demonstrate that those who seek to expose government machinations are going to pay a heavy price. And indeed, it's fascinating that on a blog, I believe it was Sandy Hook Facts, that is maintained by a colleague of his with the Honor, H-O-N-R network, which he's using as the instrument to take down these videos and blogs and so forth in such vast a number. He actually had one where he was confronted with someone saying that you lost the case against Wolfgang Halbig. What happened there was he brought a case against Wolfgang for invasion of privacy for revealing some personal information, but he wouldn't show up in court. They went through hearing after hearing, and the judge became impatient and finally directed that Leonard Posner had to sit for a video deposition. Well, rather than sit for a video deposition, he withdrew the case. But he also... Yes. That allowed Wolfgang's counterclaim to go forward, but Posner very cleverly wrote a complaint against a judge saying he didn't believe he could get a fair hearing, which was obviously purely manipulative. The judge couldn't make heads or tails of it, but excused himself, and the next judge came in and dismissed Wolfgang's suit. I mean, you know, it was a little too obvious what was going on there. So the fact is that once they discovered that Wolfgang had sent this out, the plaintiff's attorney filed a complaint against me for violating the confidentiality. I went into court and explained that I was seeking to find a confirming witness to impeach Leonard Posner on the stand because he's not the person he claimed to be. The judge was very severe with me for violating confidentiality on the grounds that if that was what I had wanted to do, I ought to have come to him to seek his permission. And I was socked with a $7,000 fine for legal fees for the attorneys having to deal with this. So I was already, you know, $7,000 out just on that basis alone for seeking to expose the truth, and where Wolfgang confirmed with my suspicion, but this remains an undeveloped aspect of the case. I mean, so you got not only is Noah Posner a fiction made up of photographs of Michael Vabner as a child, but the man who's appearing in court appears not to be the Leonard Posner whose image with that of little Noah has gone around the world. Right, in my pleadings in the course of discovery, explained that I believe there was a father-son relationship involved here, that Noah Posner was a fiction made up of photographs of Michael Vabner, but we had so many photographs of Little Noah with his father Leonard, that if Little Noah was in fact Michael Vabner, then I believe that the parent calling himself Leonard Posner was Reuben Vabner, his father, and therefore at a key juncture in the case, when the plaintiffs wanted to secure DNA results to affirm that the Noah victim was indeed the child of the Leonard father, I requested the court to expand the DNA base to include both Noah Posner, Leonard Posner, Michael Vabner, Reuben Vabner, and Veronique De La Rosa, the mother, which the court would not allow. It turns out, by the way, they got the blood sample from Wayne Carver, the medical examiner, who is not by law entitled to have it. So, you know, it's only supposed to be from the custody of a common center where they keep residue of results of criminal acts. So, I mean, this case is just shot full with all kinds of violations of law and procedure from beginning to end. I mean, notice, I was being sued in the complaint for a death certificate that was attached to the complaint that had actually been amended by Leonard Posner in 2013, which had both a file number, it had the town certification, it had the state certification. And in the complaint, it claimed that there was no material difference between this state-certified death certificate and the death certificate that I published in the book, which he had given to Kelly Watt in 2014. Kelly had submitted an affidavit that this was indeed the same death certificate he'd made available to her. But just think of it. I really was being sued over a death certificate I'd never before seen, never commented or published upon. I mean, it was that absurd. And notice this, too. Since he was sharing this death certificate that had no town or state certification or any file number with Kelly in 2014, when, by the way, no one could get access to any death certificates, they were being withheld, which made his release of this one quite a sensational development, when he already knew that it was not the current version of the death certificate, which he himself had had amended in 2013.
So all these other death certificates were being withheld. I thought a death certificate was supposed to be a public record.
The town clerk, Debbie Aurelia, entered into secret negotiation with the Connecticut state legislature to avoid having to release death certificates, which you as observed for, you know, 150 or 200 years have been in the public domain. And now in Connecticut, they no longer make available death certificates or autopsy reports to the public, which means if you want to commit a crime, if you want to murder somebody, Connecticut is a great place because you can commit your murder and the public can't even get access to the records that would enable to make a preliminary investigation of whether or not this was on the up and up. I'm telling you, Michael, the state of Connecticut appears to be, you know, corrupt from top to bottom. We know, by the way, this was a Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Eric Holder operation. Barack Obama had nullified the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, which precluded the use of the same techniques of disinformation and propaganda within the United States that were being used without, by the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, just in time to bring us Sandy Hook. In other words, he legitimized faking all these events and publishing them and reporting on them as though they were real. They include the Boston bombing, Orlando, yes, and Dallas, Parkland, Charlottesville. And get this, Michael, I have brought together in those various cases other experts who are expert on each of these cases. That's what I do. I specialize in bringing together the best experts to take a conspiracy theory from a theory in the weak sense of a conjecture, rumor, or guess to a theory in the strong sense of an empirically testable explanatory hypothesis in the sense of Newton's theory of gravitation, Einstein's theory of relativity, Darwin's theory of evolution, with special concern for sorting out the fabricated from the authentic evidence. I've done it again and again and again. I did it with Sandy Hook. I did it with the Boston bombing. I did it with Orlando and Dallas. I did it with Charlottesville. I did it with Parkland. I even did it with the moon landing. And there's now this new brilliant film, American Moon, by this Italian director that just takes apart the moon landing. Well, I was publishing about it quite a long time ago. Amazon has now banned five more of our books, the Moon book, the Boston book, the Orlando book, the Parkland book, the Charlottesville book. Michael, half of our books, we have 12 books at Moon Rock Books, half of them have been banned by Amazon. That tells you what's going on.
Well, obviously on the issue of the moon landings, you and I disagree, and we have disagreed about that before. So let's get on back here to Sandy Hook and the Boston Marathon bombing. I mentioned before how Dzhokhar Tsarnaev's court-appointed attorney, supposed to be a defense attorney, walks into the courtroom and tells the jury he did it. And, you know, I could have gotten him off with reasonable doubt, because the backpacks that Tsarnaev brothers were wearing when they were photographed at the marathon were gray, and the remnants of the bombs that went off were in these black backpacks with an easily recognizable white patch. And there's your reasonable doubt, and that's all it takes to acquit somebody, supposedly,
wonderful,
in the United States.
Michael, okay? You're right on top of this. Listen, you'd be interested to know that there's a retired professor of law, John Remington Graham, who resides in Canada, who assisted me in constructing my initial answer for the court, but where, more significantly, he has entered an amicus curiae brief on the basis of the backpack evidence, where I am the first of the three-sided Americans in support of that amicus brief, which the First Circuit Court has accepted and should make a difference
to
the ultimate outcome.
Jim, I got to put you on hold. Another commercial break. We'll be right back.
Hey, this check is wrong. I worked a holiday and 7 hours of overtime. Not getting paid correctly is a real pain. It could also hurt our boss if our company provides out-of-compliance checks. That's right. Construction companies doing business with the government can get fined, or officials of the companies can go to jail if the checks aren't right. It's a law. The Davis-Bacon Act has 30 compliance issues for every check, but there is an easy way for construction companies to be in compliance. EMARS offers Compliant Client, a web-based system that finds and corrects all 30 of the possible out-of-compliance check issues. Users of Compliant Client report an 80% savings in time and money. Running a weekly payroll usually takes about 5 minutes. All 15,000-plus clients of EMARS have never had a legal compliance issue. Plus, they sleep better on check day. Contact EMARS at emarsinc.com or call 480-595-0466.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations, A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hand seemed to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. And we're finishing up here with Jim Fetzer. And Jim, I'm sure that you're aware that there are plenty of other people besides Posner who have a very strong motive for you'd basically get crushed out of existence. And again, it goes back to the fact that the U.S. government has legalized deception operations against the American people, like 9/11. And they're starting to realize they don't work. In fact, if I would say what happened at Sandy Hook is they overreached. They were overconfident. They thought they could just put this thing out there. They'd be believed. The American people would fall for it. But they made so many mistakes, and I think that's why that police lieutenant was out there issuing that threat, is they knew that they'd made a lot of mistakes, and they were going to get called on it here. So we've got about another 3 minutes until the top of the hour here, and I'm going to have to let you go. What else do you want to share with our audience?
Well, I think you're exactly right. And in fact, when InfoWars published a piece about the book having been banned initially, they had an even more clear version of the photograph of that, what I thought initially was a SWAT team, but appears to have been a crime investigative unit vehicle there in the parking lot before the event had occurred. Now, it was a good piece. It was up for about 38 minutes and had already drawn like 138 comments when it was taken down. And I'm quite certain it was taken down because it had attached to the photograph, credit Connecticut State Police, which obviously blew the... Yeah. It's all in the record there, Michael. I tell you, I'm very grateful for the expressions of support I've been receiving, intermixed with a certain amount of hate mail and, you know, phone calls. Not everyone is happy about this. I think it's very difficult for Americans to admit that they've been played. Will Rogers, I think, made the observation that what you don't know that hurts you, it's what you think you know that ain't so. And this is one of those cases where it's just very, very difficult when you've heard these reports for so many years. It was a very cleverly designed psyop to have maximal emotional impact on the American people. So, you know, I think you're right. It was the first of what would become many. Some of which have become incredibly ludicrous, like the El Paso shooting. When he's coming in, he's got trousers with big cargo pockets, and when he's going out, they've disappeared. So what did he do? Decide, well, I'm here at Walmart, I'm going to pick up a new pair of trousers. And the shooter in Dayton had died in 2014, so that's a miraculous resurrection. In fact, that was like Sandy Hook, because Adam Lanza, the purported shooter, was initially recorded in the Social Security Death Index as having died on the 13th, making his feat in shooting 20 children and 6 adults the following day all the more remarkable.
Yeah, that definitely would be remarkable. I remember when there was this big argument over trying to get Adam Lanza's medical records to find out what medications he might be on because of concerns that these mass shooters are very often induced to behave this way because of prescription psychiatric medication. But Connecticut's economy is heavily tied in with Big Pharma, and so they put the kibosh on that. Anyway, Jim Fetzer, thank you for spending the last hour with us. We're going to let you go here, take a break for station identification, back with more news after these few words.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say, and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.